Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we're back. Hello, it's another Writer's Routine. This is the show that takes a quick scan through the working day of a successful author to try and squeeze all the info about planning and plotting and publishing that we can. Now, today we're speaking to the thriller author, Jackie Rose. She's got a brand new book out right now. It's called Toxic, and it's all about a tussle for power and revenge in murky gangland. Now, we talk about the very spontaneous way that she plans her story. In that she doesn't. She barely gives it a second thought. Also, we find out why she spends her writing days mainly wandering from one place in her house to the other. And we learn why she doesn't want to know anything about the ending until she finally gets there.
One and one doesn't always make two when you're writing. And so I try not to go there, because I think if you know the end, you're working towards that end, whereas you might miss a different route, you might miss a different trail.
So stick around, that's all on the way with Jackie Rose in this week's Writer's Routine. Yes, hello, welcome along, welcome back, welcome one, welcome all. My name is Dan Simpson. Thank you for joining me with another Writer's Routine. Now, very quickly, before we get into the episode, I want to do a quick plea, do all the admin, get out of the way early doors. If you're enjoying the show so far, I would love to hear what you think over on the iTunes podcast store. So I guess that's if you've heard a few of the shows that we've done in the run of the series over the last few months and you're enjoying that, or maybe this is your first one. Hey, if you liked the tight editing and the snappy chat in the first couple of minutes, then I guess you can let me know about that too. Yeah, it would be fantastic if you could leave Writer's Routine a review over on the iTunes podcast store. I promise it'll barely take like a minute of your day. For such a small amount of time for you, it makes such a big deal for us here. It helps us with the whole chart, it helps us find new listeners, and then get more authors on. And it's so simple, I promise. Just get onto iTunes, find this show, write a few fancy words, if you like. 5 stars would be amazing. I'd love to see what you say with your review on the iTunes podcast store. Leave your name on there as well, because if it's a particularly florid description of what we do, I might give you a shout out in the next few weeks. Please, it barely takes a second. Just leave Writer's Routine a review on the iTunes podcast store. So Jackie Rose is our guest on the show this week. She's here sharing the diary of her working day and trying to explain how she plans and how she plots and how she finally publishes her book. Spoiler, she doesn't do any of the first two. She's got a really, really chilled out approach to storytelling and kind of laissez-faire manner in plotting, I think is the best way to describe it. We'll talk about that during the show. Now, Jackie has sold over 100,000 copies of 6 books so far in the series, and she's also dabbled in other genres under a different pen name, one that I will keep safe with her. Now, the Jackie Rose books, they're all thrillers, and this one stays in the urban gangland world. So we talk about how she spices up her series of thrillers, because they've all got one-word titles. The covers, they all look fairly similar. So we find out how she makes them all different for a very loyal readership in just a sec, and how she writes them both to please and pacify and also surprise that expectant fan base who know exactly what they want from a Jackie Rose book. That's in the conversation in a few minutes' time. Also, we talk about the things that she needs to know, the very few things that she needs to know about her story before she starts typing away, and also why she doesn't read her contemporaries' work and how she thinks that keeps her books fresh and unique. Plus, there's some kind of niche editing and publication chat in this, which is always nice to hear. I know that some of you listening may be coming towards the end of your work and you're figuring out what to do next with it. Jackie's got some helpful tips for you in just a sec. And we get her views on whether reviews actually mean anything at all. So that's on the way with this week's guest, Jackie Rose, after we start, as always, with what she sees at the place where she sits down to write.
What I see is a shiny bookcase my daughter made me with all Swarovski crystals on it, which is pretty cool. I see my books and I see a picture of Malibu, because that inspires me to keep on writing, because I think to myself, that's the house I want in Malibu. And if I keep on writing, maybe one day I'll get it. So that's, yeah, totally.
Where are you in the house then with your hundreds of Swarovski crystals lining?
Yeah. Well, I have to move about. I start off in my study. I've got a study, which is cool. First time I've got a study. But then once I start getting distracted and start going on social media, I have to move myself down to the kitchen. So I change computers and I go on my laptop. And then I get distracted by making, you know, all sorts of food that I don't need. And then I go in the garden and with my laptop. And then in the end, I end up going to the stables where my horses are kept. And I sit in the field writing with my laptop. And that's where I find my peace. Yeah.
So how did that develop then? Why did you start suddenly moving all around the house?
It just felt really, I wasn't settled. And I just thought, oh no, I've got to get up and move somewhere. It was like a subconscious thing. I just felt, oh no, this isn't right. And just felt all agitated, not concentrating. And so it was a natural thing to move about. It's really odd, really odd. It's the only thing I sort of move about for. When I read, when I watch TV, I'm not, you know, desperate to move about, but that's what happens.
So the logical question would then be, if you find the piece that you need to write in the stables, why don't you just start the day there?
Yes, you see, that would be the logical thing, but everything is a home, you know, sort of the kettle, sort of notes, you know, pens and papers. And each time I think it's not going to happen. Each time I think I'll be able to sit in front of this computer and not move. But, you know, I know maybe I should try it starting from the stables, but maybe I'll have to work backwards and end up at home. Maybe that's a good way to do it.
Well, here's something. Do the different places that you work in your house give you different ideas and inspiration? So, you know, they say about memory, the easiest way to remember something that you've forgotten is to go back to the last place that you remembered it, because it sparks your brain into action.
I would say different parts when I'm in the field. There's more of intensity about it. My mind is absolute. I can't get Wi-Fi up there or in the fields and anything. So my mind's free of anything else, and it's at one with nature, and it's intense, and it's just so focused. It's almost like I'm doing a yoga meditation up there. Yeah, it's weird.
The show is called Writer's Routine. Talk me through yours then. We already know that you travel all around your house to get things done, but the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, on a day where you are writing, how does it work?
I wake up with thoughts in my head. I've got kids and I don't want them to speak to me, because all these thoughts are going round and round in my brain, because I don't actually make notes at all. I don't have a story plan at all. So if I'm halfway through an idea and somebody goes, Mom, where's my socks, Mom? It really sort of, you know, sort of snaps me out, because I'm sort of in a real zone. The minute I start writing, I'm in a zone. So all these ideas, you know, come into my head. And then often I will then, you know, see them off very quickly to school, and I will sit down, make my tea, sit in the study, put some music on, and just shut the door.
What music are you listening to?
It depends what scene. It depends what scene, because if it's a real intense car chase or something really dramatic, it will be maybe a rock song. So my writing goes with the speed of the beat. But otherwise, if this is a really sad, again, it might be something like a slow opera piece. It might be classical piano. But I am distracted if there's words. If there's words, I can't, because I'm listening to the words rather than the melody. So I'll put some music on and then I'll just read through what I've written the day before, hate it, and start editing as I go along, because I like to have a really tight draft by the end. I'm not one of these authors that can, you know, sort of have a really messy first draft at all. And then I'll just sit there, and almost like Anthony Trollope used to finish at a certain time. I'm pretty much like that. At 1 o'clock, that's it. I'll go and see my horses, you know, unless I'm, of course, in the field. And I'll unwind. I might go riding. But all the time, my thoughts on it. But I know I can get really obsessive. And if I get obsessive, and every life goes out of the window. So I try to force myself to do other things as well.
So when you're doing your tour of the house, how long do you tend to spend in each place before you get up and move on? What do you think your concentration, what length your bursts of concentration before you need to get up and go?
Probably about 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
20 minutes, yeah. 20 minutes. It's unless I'm editing. If I'm editing, I will sit there maybe for two, three hours, but I'll be writing 20 minutes and then my brain's going, what are you doing? And I have to pull myself away because I start getting all agitated, like I said, and then I'll move and then I'll sit down and be able to write about 20 minutes, yeah.
So you're writing from when you drop the kids off at school. So what's that, about 9:30 till 1?
Yeah, 9:30 till 1 o'clock. And then I'll try to force myself not to go back until the evening when everything, the day's done. Because otherwise, I can't, like I say, I can get really obsessive. And, you know, I won't want to do anything. It was a friend, actually, who said about her boyfriend did speed racing and banger cars, and I thought, oh, that's really cool. And then she was telling me about the characters, the weird and strange characters you get at the ringside. And then from there, I started to think about this guy, Johnny, who maybe had, you know, his own racetrack, but maybe dealt in drugs as well, because she was telling me about how they launder a lot of money, allegedly, at these, you know, banger racing and stuff. And that's when it started to form in my head the idea of, you know, this guy who sort of wheels and deals around these banger racing. And yeah.
Now, so you've got your wheeler dealer around the banger racer. Mm-hmm. Then what happens? You've already said earlier that you don't plan it so thoroughly, so you know exactly what's coming next. But how do you expand on that initial idea? It can't just be, right, I'm going to have a character called Johnny. He might allegedly launder money in a banger racer, fingers on the keyboard.
Yeah, it's totally like that. I knew that I wanted to bring Alfie Jennings in from my old books, because I've had a break of 2 years writing these books. And I thought to myself, OK, let me bring them back, you know, because they've been in Marbella, you know, sunning it up, having a good time. I thought, let's bring them back and let's mix it in with this guy, Johnny. I had no idea how, no idea why. I knew in my heart that they were a bit down on their luck and they needed maybe another deal to sort of become kingpins of Essex again. And but literally, I don't know. And sometimes I can panic. I think, don't panic, it'll be okay. Especially when I know sort of I'm halfway through and maybe my deadline's looming. Yeah, I have no idea where it's going to go. And it just, I see it like a movie, and I feel I'm almost the secretary to my characters. And all I'm doing is writing down what I see and hear in my head, you know, so that's how it works. It's odd. It's strange.
But you must have some idea of your story. I can't figure out that. Right, so we've got Johnny.
Yeah.
Johnny is involved. He's a bit of a mobster.
Yeah.
He's involved in banger racing.
Yeah.
I know it sounds romantic, but I can't believe that is it. You must know you must have some idea of the journey that he's going to take. So if you look at the story like a roadmap,
mm-hmm.
you must know you're going from A, you must know moderately where you want to end up at B, and you must have a few pit stops on the way.
No, not at all. It's like, for example, you said to me, make a story up about this cup. I would just start making, I wouldn't have any idea. I would just start talking about the cup, and maybe suddenly it grows legs, and then it walks out of the door, and all the time I'm doing a sentence, then the next image in my mind comes up, and that's how I've always done it, and that's since a kid. It's really strange, and it's like loads of voices in my head, and I really do see it like a movie. I mean, when my editors and publishers ask me for a synopsis, I can't give it them, and they've given up asking because I really, really don't know. Occasionally, I'm not saying that, you know, sort of I might go, oh, I know, it'd be really great if there was a, I don't know, huge explosion at a petrol station. That's not in my book, so don't worry. But, you know, and I think, oh, yeah, I could put that in. But I don't know how I'm going to get there. I have no idea how I'm going to get there at all. And so my head has to be really clear. The weeks running up to starting a new book, I can't be stressed. I can't be too tired because my brain won't function properly. It's odd, isn't it? I know.
So if all you know when you start writing is, yeah, is maybe a few characters,
yes,
you must need to know them very well then. How do you expand and develop your characters? Because this type of stories that you write are of a type, and yeah, there are a few of those around.
Yes.
You know, Martina Cole, yeah, people like this. And the readers like to know the type of story that they are getting. How do you make sure that your mobster isn't exactly the same mobster that I could read in any book like this?
Because I don't read other people's books, so I know it's unique to me. That's the thing. So I know if I read Martina's or Kimberly's, or, and I love Kimberly, you know, sort of, you might start picking up, you know, subconsciously bits and pieces. But I know, because I don't read, you know, those sort of books, because I love my classics, you know, that's not going to come into the pages. That's going to be same old same. Of course, there's a tick box for this sort of genre. You've got to have sort of hard men, but with a heart not completely damaged. That then, you know, you can't bring them back from the brink. You need a woman in adversity. I get that. But that's stories from age old stories, isn't it? So that's like in every movie. Yeah.
So do you have any techniques for developing them then? Or do they just flesh themselves out, yeah, on the page?
They flesh themselves out. And one of the things that a lot of readers says to me that I was surprised at this twist. I didn't see it coming. It's like, no, neither did I. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's what the good thing about not making plans, because it's not plotted out. It just happens. So I don't know who's behind the door when I see the door in my head. I have to get to that sentence. You know, Alfie walked up to the door, he opened the door, and there was, and then whoever is there. I didn't know Johnny needed a wife until I had done the first scene with Johnny at the Bangor Racing and his skip yard with this prostitute. And then suddenly I thought, I bet he's got a wife. Do you remember? My brain would, you know, and it sort of developed from there. And, you know, what sort of wife would he be? Because he seemed very controlling when I was starting writing the scene, and really weird, like nobody leaves Johnny. And he sort of, there was two sides to him, a very passionate side, where, you know, angry side, should I say, like he beats, in the first scene, he beats up the, one of his workers really badly. But then we cut to him cradling his worker in his lap, you know, saying, oh, there, that's it, it's all over. Like really weird and sinister. And I thought, how awful would it be to be married to somebody like that? And so Bree, who I didn't realise was going to be such a, you know, sort of a major player in the book, came into it. I just thought maybe she was a side player. Because obviously I knew anybody who had married to somebody like Johnny would either be, had to be hard as nails, or be really vulnerable. And she came out as vulnerable because it turns out his mother, Ma Dwyer, you know, is the hard as nails one, who, you know, and he's got all his strange behaviour from her. When I started writing Ma, you know, I did think of Ma Baker. She had all the gangster sons. And that's, you know, and I thought, oh, yeah, she's very much like Ma Baker, big and bold and just nasty, but very possessive over her sons. And I thought, gosh, could you imagine what Bree's life would be like in the middle of this, and not being able to get away, not being able to escape, not being able to. And it sort of, hopefully, you know, sort of developed organically.
So how far into your story, and you don't know what's going on,
yeah,
do things start to click into place when you maybe have an idea how you will end this?
I try to block out the end.
Really? Because I just can't. I can't fathom that. Because when I read stories,
yes,
things are foreshadowed.
Yes.
I can look at the story as if it's a math sum, and if I were to go deep enough into it, I could figure out what it's going to equal.
Yes.
And I can't believe that you can't figure that out yourself as an author.
Yeah, no, because that's a different sort of brainwave, isn't it? You're thinking. Because that's... Are you quite mathematical?
No, not really.
Oh, aren't you? Yeah, yeah, because the way you explain that, yeah. It's like, one and one doesn't always make two when you're writing. And so I try not to go there, because I think if you know the end, you're working towards that end, whereas you might miss a different route. You might miss a different trail. Yes, it's bizarre. When people ask me, how do you write? I have no answers for them, because it kind of just happens naturally. And that's the problem. And, I know there are lots of authors out there who have this amazing plan, amazing storyline, all these different color codings and cards and different. It's like you're just storytelling. It's like sitting around a campfire and making up a story. It's just basic, back to basics, and having fun with it.
But you're against both a deadline of time and a deadline of words, almost. I'd imagine you need to have, I don't know, is it 100,000 words? What is it?
Yeah, 100,000, 90 to 100,000 words, yeah.
So there must be a point where you're 80,000 words in and you're thinking, I need to end this.
You just naturally know an arc. You naturally know an arc of the story, how long it's going to be. And maybe my first book, if I look at the first book Taken, I didn't naturally know the arc. Maybe it went on to 110,000 words. But you automatically feel a story, the middle, the beginning, the middle. And I'll sometimes say to myself, I bet this will finish around 92,000 words, and I'm only out by about 1,000.
More on Toxic then, and I promise this is the last question that I will push. I will push about this.
Yeah, it's the first time I've thought about it myself.
Without giving too much away,
yeah.
At what point in you writing the story of Toxic did you realise how it would end? I know you said that you're not looking for it, but there must be a moment if you are driving on this route through the fog, because you don't know what's in front of you, where it all starts to become clear. Do you remember that moment?
I think it was almost at the end, I suddenly got a moment. Could you imagine if this happened? And that was probably about 3,000, 4,000 words away from what happens, yeah. I didn't know, but I have to trust in myself. As in, it's been like a singer or an athlete or whatever. You have to trust that you can do it. And when you panic, that's when it's not going to happen. Whereas suddenly, about 3,000-4,000 words from the end, I just thought, of course. Thank you, Brie, for telling me. Because it was like Brie who told me. I feel like I don't tell them, they tell me. Yeah, and like I say, I'm just the secretary there. It's like, yes. And so far, it's never failed me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Now, very quickly, before we get back to part two with Jackie Rose, let me just take a quick second to remind you of all the ways that you can get in touch with us at Writers Routine. Oh, very quickly, by the way, do you remember a few weeks ago we had Garrod Conley on the show with the incredible story of his experience in gay conversion therapy after his Baptist preacher parents sent him there? Well, the trailer for the film adaptation is out right now, and it looks like something very special as well. It's got Russell Crowe, Nicole Kidman in it. So you go and find it, please. It's well worth a few minutes of your time. I may even give it a retweet as well, if you forget about this, just to jog your memory so you can watch the trailer and then maybe share the episode that we recorded with the author, Garrod Conley, across your socials too. Now, to see that retweet, you'll need to give us a follow first. We are Writers Pod on Twitter, where you can get little snippets of our chats to break up your day. You can get updates from us all the time on there as well. And it's probably the best way to get a nice quick reply over on Twitter. Also, we're on Instagram. It is Writers Routine there, where you can get daily, near daily, I guess. You can get updates and motivational quotes when I remember. And they're all photoshopped kind of slightly iffily onto pictures of the authors that I can find online. So that's Writers Routine on Instagram. And as always, you can get to us on the website where you can send us a message and you can take a look at what we're doing over at writersroutine.com. Now, here's the thing. I am aware that a lot of the listeners to this show are writers. And there's a huge community of authors on Twitter with a writing block, and they're always looking for anything to take their mind off of the book that they need to get done. So that means there's no excuses. Give us a follow on Twitter. We are Writers Pod there, and I promise we can provide you with some online distraction to your work. Let's get back to our chat then with Jackie Rose, the hugely successful author. And if you want a sign of how successful she is, by the way, when I met her a few weeks ago, she looked like something that the Queen would want to put on display in the Tower of London. Honestly, she was just wearing so much bling, so many jewels. She looked incredible. And she mentioned Swarovski crystals earlier. I think I pronounced that right. Well, you know, Swarovskis, I've been told, are for success. Now, we're chatting about her new book, Toxic, how that was plotted, how it was put down on paper, how it was then published. And in this second half, we chat about how she constantly has to keep in mind what her audience wants and how possibly, at times, that's kind of at odds with what her hand wants to write. Also, you can hear about language and what she thinks about her characters. And we get back into it with my, I'll be honest, bafflement at the way that she plots. I'm just thinking, if Jackie suddenly arrives at the end, does that mean she needs to go back throughout the story and sprinkle in a few clues and red herrings along the way?
I make sure it's just, along the way, it's really tight and I'm pleased with it, and then once I finish, I then send it to my editor and then she'll give me the feedback. But yeah, no, injection clues and stuff, no, because the readers aren't stupid. They can feel you injecting the clue. It's like, oh yeah, they put a clue in chapter 10. Yeah.
We mentioned earlier how you don't read Martina Cole's work. So this is your seventh book?
This is my seventh book on the genre, yes.
Seventh book in the genre. What do your readers want, do you think? What do they imagine a Jackie Rose book to be? When they're picking up the new one, what does it need to have in it?
It's definitely got to be character-driven. I know a lot of stories, you're supposed to have that. But the characters that they can relate to, characters that they can hate, it needs to be a book. Hopefully when they buy my book, they'll know that their emotions are going to be challenged. They're going to have a thrilling read. And yes, it's gangland, but that's sort of the side story. It's always about people. It's always about the emotions going on with people and having to face adversity.
Now, so your seven books, they're all one word titled.
They are.
Of this genre. And as you said, your readers do know what they might be getting.
Yes.
They know that their emotions are going to be challenged. How is it for you as an author to make them all different, so that Taken will be different from Dishonor, that Toxic will be different from Avenged?
Yeah, I think hopefully my brain just gives me different challenges all the time. I would hate to only be in the box of just one area, one lot of people, but my publishers have been great because one of them is partly set in Islamabad, another one is, you know, set in Soho, another one is set in the 1970s as Ireland, and then jumps back to present day. So they've given me a real free rein to be able to explore the world, as long as you do bring it back to the tick boxes of what readers expect.
Let's talk about the way that you tell your story, yeah, then. So the actual words that are written on the page. Mm. How much thought are you giving to what word is coming next? If you edit quite tightly, yeah, everything needs to be very fine-tuned.
Yes. I write quite lyrically, which is annoying sometimes, because I used to do a lot of poetry. And sometimes I have to go, I don't need a complex sentence when I read it back. I'm just telling the story. But I'm not actually thinking of the words when I'm writing, because, like I say, I'm seeing them. I'm seeing what's happening. I'm seeing the people going in and out of the room. I'm hearing the conversations. The dialogue is very easy for me because I just hear it constantly. But when I do read back, I need it to not, the words not to sound jarring, not to sound, sort of sharp. I like to see it slight lyrical flow. And obviously I've got to pull back from my, like, I've got a literary side to me. I've got to pull back from that because that's not what people want in a Jackie Rose. But I do like as well-written words as you can.
So that's interesting. Why don't you think they want that from a Jackie Rose? Well, let's start.
I've been told.
So who are you aiming this book at? So who's in your mind when you're writing it?
I'm hopefully aiming it beyond the box of maybe the Martina Cole, you know, readers, because Martina's got a brilliant set of readers. But maybe, I'm not sure, they should try, but the Guardian readers of this world might not, you know, automatically reach down for Martina Cole. I mean, I don't know why not, because she's a fab storyteller. But I'm just trying to aim it for a broader audience as possible, to give a good story for people who, like I say, wouldn't necessarily reach down for a Gangland, just to expand, you know, that small box of readers, Gangland readers.
So when you're editing,
yes,
what are you cutting out most of all, do you think? What really bugs you that you need to quickly pick out? How are you stripping it back?
I'm stripping it back if it's too, is the word florid? You know, too sort of flancy. And I call it my candle and candelabra moment. Just get to the point sometimes, I have to, you know what I mean? Because I can be very sort of Bronte-esque writing, and I have to strip that away, and I go, no, because you write what you'd want to read. And yeah, I do want to read it, but, you know, a lot of people might not want to read it. So I am aware of the commercial books and how it should be done. So I do strip that away, and I do try to bring it back to what it should be in that book.
Talking about how commercial your books are.
Yes.
And we mentioned earlier just that your readers like to know what they can expect. So does that mean, have you almost got a tick box for a Jackie Rose book?
When I write a Jackie Rose book, I know what I have to do. I know what I have to do. I
what
know
are
what's
they?
Required of me. Like I say, it's got to be 100,000 words. It's got to be women on diversity. It's like, strong, tough men. It's got to be a storyline. It's got to be edge of your seat. It's got to be clear. It shouldn't contain too many characters, which is I always struggle with. And it's just got to be a fun, thrilling read that readers can pick up anytime, you know, if they've just, you know, finished cooking a meal, maybe they've got half an hour. It's got to be an easy read.
And how much do you think that affects the way that you tell your story? Is it simply a switch that you can flick in your brain that says, right, I'm writing the Jackie Rose genre now?
Yeah, it is a switch, because I think it would be like a musician if they were writing, like Arkham Funkel or something, they're writing the World Cup song. He would know it would have to be, you know, sort of straight and and just sort of catchy and fun, you know, rather than something very, very elaborate. Might not hold the readers, because you want to hook the readers in and you want to hold them. It's no good, you know, just letting them grow halfway through. Two other main protagonists, Alfie and Vaughn, and they do feature in other books, and they're the gangsters. They're the guys who are bad guys, but you're hoping to root for. So they, Johnny couldn't be somebody you wanted to root for. You wanted, I needed Johnny to be somebody that you wanted to see fall because of the way he treated Bree, the way he treated his kids, what he was doing in his life. So there couldn't be a redeeming, too many redeeming features. But at the same time, I wanted a character that you understood how he got there. You understood how he became so horrible. Because I think if you don't understand that and why that, you know, maybe you do lose the readers. He's got to be a whole person. And so he had a very damaged childhood from Ma. But then you see, rather than flashbacks, you see how Ma treats him. And you go, okay, that's why. But that doesn't excuse him from his behaviour. But there's an understanding. So he needed to be a real rogue. But readers had to understand why he would do such things. Otherwise, sometimes it doesn't come across as truthful.
And that's all figured out without any brainstorming, without any jotting down on a notepad.
Totally. Because, you know, I'm just like, you just know people. It's like when you have a group of friends, isn't it? After a couple of sort of conversations, you kind of figured out what that person's like, and you can do a little profile of them in your head. And it's the same sort of thing. You kind of, when you're writing a character and when you start writing them and you see how their story's going, you go, okay, I clocked that person. I can see what he's like. Yeah.
We spoke at the very start about when the idea for this book came into your head.
Yeah.
And that you get the idea, go and sit down, start tapping away. What about the routine of how you write the whole book? So what's the time scale for that? So you have this very first idea. How long is it before you'll then sit down and start tapping away? How long is it then before you'll hand in your first draft?
Okay, so usually, I mean, the Toxic was the beginning of a new contract and I was waiting for everything to be signed and sealed. So, but usually an idea would come into my head, like a character, and I'd think, okay, that's something and nothing. But then if this character wouldn't go away in my head, I was like, I've got a story to tell, you need to sit down. Then I go, okay, this is what it's about. Then I would sit down and probably it would take me, if I'm being really good, it'd probably take me about 3.5 months to write the book. But sometimes I ride my horses instead of writing and I go, oh my goodness, I've got 8 weeks to write the book. And then I just sort of go on an intense every single day without fail. I know where I have to be and I never miss the deadlines.
You said that you edit very thoroughly.
Yeah.
I was chatting to Mark Billingham the other day, who said that he was a two-draft novelist.
Yeah.
What about you?
No, that's it. I send off what I've edited to my editor. Yeah, what I've written, I send it off.
And that gets published?
No, I mean, she sends off structural edits, but they're never huge. They're never huge. I've never had like pages and pages of having to cut this character out. But it's more sort of bring out the character of Bree. Maybe, you know, maybe in this scene you can make maybe Johnny more sympathetic and I'll go yay or nay. Yeah, I've been really lucky with my structural edits. It doesn't take long at all. So, yeah.
This is your first book in 2-3 years?
This is the first in this genre. I've written a couple of geopolitical thrillers, yeah.
Oh, incredible. Yeah. So, with the geopolitical thrillers, mm-hmm. how did you switch your writing style? I know that we've mentioned this before, to then write these urban gangland thrillers.
That's a good question, because it was difficult, because I don't find writing the Jackie Rose books difficult, you know, because it's a fun storytelling, whereas the geopolitical thrillers, they were complex, difficult, multi-layered, lots of characters, lots of research, and it's like wow. So to make the jump, you know, back, I could see when I was editing, you know, I was making it maybe too complex. And one of the, I'm getting really nice reviews, which is great. But a few people have gone, oh, there's lots of characters, too many characters. And that's the throwback from having these geopolitical thrillers. And so the switch was much more difficult than I thought, because I was trying to make it too complex and I was like, whoa, hold on there. It doesn't have to be complex. It can just be a thrilling story and what readers expect. So once that sort of went into my brain, I thought, okay, this is how it goes. And actually, what I did have to do was read one of my books. So I thought, oh, that's how I do it. Because I'd forgotten how to write a Jackie Rose book.
And you mentioned reviews just a second ago. Yeah. How much do you try and learn from them? So
I do learn. I do try to learn, because it's the reader. It's no good being stubborn and going, what do they know? You know, because actually, you know, if one or two going, or there's too many characters, you go, yeah, okay, that's just your taste. But maybe when five or six or seven are going, there's lots of characters, and I got confused, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I'll bring that back. And I thought, I didn't think there was lots of characters. But obviously, they thought there was maybe, you know, too many characters. And so in the next book, Fatal, which I've already written, I did think, let me make it a smaller set of, you know, people. But I do try to learn from what they say, and it's always interesting. But that's, you know, most people are really positive in the sort of past 4 or 5 years, however long it's been since I've been writing these books, about, you know, it's been a page turn and I enjoyed it, you know. Yeah, they've been great reviews.
Well then, that's about it for today's Writer's Routine. Massive thank you to Jackie Rose for coming on the show, for sparing me a few minutes of her day. And if you love your page-turning, high-speed commercial thrillers, I think Toxic, her brand new one, may just be the book for you. You can find links to it over on my website, which is writersroutine.com. Now, something very quick to flag up. In terms of future episodes of this show, things are getting a bit loose in the next couple of months, but with good reason. We'll get back to normality kind of September time, I should hope. Now, we should be back next week talking to the co-authors of a book which hopes to teach anyone how to write their memoir. And then, well, after that, I'm in Edinburgh for the whole of August. I am performing, actually, in the Fun Kids Epic Roadshow Adventure, which perhaps gives some clues as to what my day job is. And if you're coming along, if you're at the Edinburgh Fringe over the next few weeks, and if you've got your whole family there, maybe you've got some kids in tow too, please bring them along. I'd love to see you. I'd love to say hello. And it's always good to have confirmed numbers through the door when you're up in Edinburgh. It ain't cheap to live there for a month. Now, what that means is one of two things for this show. Either there won't be many episodes until September after next week, or I'll get loads of guests in the bag, because think of it, there must be tons of people at the Edinburgh Fringe who have a book out. Surely it can't be that hard to have a chat to some of them, but we'll see what happens. That's the state of play. We may be away for a while, we may not be. Please, though, if you want to keep updated with what we're doing on the show, give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram. And I'd love it as well if you could leave us a review on the iTunes podcast store. And that's about it. All things being well, I will see you next week chatting to two authors who have co-written a book on how to let you write your own memoir in the best possible way. That's next time on Writer's Routine. I'll see you then. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.